Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Connor Orr. Albert Breer is in some other unidentified Marriott, parts unknown in the United States. And
I'm very disciplined about staying in Marriott properties. In fact, I may be more disciplined about only staying in Marriott properties than I am about anything else in my life. And I have three kids.
Once I hit the... because if you go to your Marriott Bonvoy account and it shows you how many nights that you've actually slept in a Marriott, and once you hit the 365, something really changes where you realize that you've spent a calendar year.
You can look
of
your lifetime.
What's that?
You can look up your lifetime nights.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. Word. All right. Let me. While you're go ahead and talk, and I'm going to see if I can find my number.
Yeah, once you hit 365, you're like, you know, it's like this weird biodome sort of feeling where you just go into a Marriott and then sometimes you're like bleary-eyed and you're just like, do I live here now? Are these people my family? And, you know, it's like, it's, you know,
oh
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
They cook for you. You know, like there's breakfast if you go to the Residence Inn and they like make your bed. It's this very, Albert, this has been happening for like years and years of our life.
Dude.
Your hands are over your eyes. How many nights, Albert, have you slept in a Marriott hotel?
Oh my God. This is the most depressing thing I've ever seen. 2,172.
2,172. Okay,
and then I'm gonna divide by 365.
Yeah, hold on. I'm gonna get the old calculator out.
I have been platinum elite for 17 years.
2,162 divided by
72.
Oh wait. 2,172 divided by 2,172 divided by.
I have the number in front of me.
5.95 years of your life in a Marriott. How much of that was the NFL lockout in 2011?
Dude, I've spent more time in a Marriott than time my daughter has spent alive.
That is so...
She turns five next week. Happy birthday, Jenny. But yeah, that's that is really, really depressing. So I'm going to get to 6 years at like how many? So six times.
Pretty soon.
I am 18 nights away. So like probably by the end of the, from 6 years.
Probably around the Super Bowl. What's going to happen is, did you ever see the movie Up in the Air with George Clooney?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, at some point during the Super Bowl, we're going to be in a Marriott property hotel, and someone's just going to knock on your door, and it's just going to be this old guy with like a big handlebar mustache. It's going to be the ghost of J.W. Marriott, and he's going to come in, and he's going to hand you a cake, and he's going to say, I've been taking care of you for 6 years, Albert, for you know, 6 years.
That the sad thing is that doesn't even – that's probably just since I was like – since I signed up for it, right? Like, so I don't know what I spent, but it probably wasn't that much before I signed up for it because I wasn't like traveling around for work or whatever. But that's like really, I mean, I've been covering the NFL for 20 years. So it's all within the last 20 years.
Goodness gracious.
Or six, this is my 20th season. So 19 years. It was 19 years ago that I started covering the NFL.
That's amazing. That's
really sad. Oh my God. Like now that makes it worse, right? That's like almost a third of my life over the last 19 years has been spent in Marriott properties.
It makes you think about.
Oh my like, God.
It makes you think about like nature and nurture. And I remember reading this like story.
That's awful.
About this kid who was like raised entirely in the dark. This was like 10 years ago. It was like this girl whose parents like never let her outside. And obviously that had some issues, you know, and she had to adjust to real life. We're allowed outside, but we just spend a lot of time in like, and it's so weird, right? Because it's like the same four different Marriott properties, and they're all set up exactly the same, and they look exactly the same, and you walk in and you know what it's going to look like, right?
Right?
And we just spend all of our time in there, and we don't even use the pool. Like we, you know.
I know the difference between like, I know, like the back of my hand, the difference between a full-service Marriott, a Westin, a Residence Inn, a Fairfield, a Courtyard, a JW Marriott. Like, I know what the difference is. Like, I can tell you the way the room's set up, like, all of that.
If you blindfolded me and just put me into the lobby and you told me which one it was, I could get to my room without without removing a blindfold. I know that. I feel pretty good about that.
Shouldn't they give me something?
That's what I said. JW Marriott is coming to your room.
I mean, Mr. Marriott, I'm coming up on my my 6 year.
6 years in your hotels.
So sad.
It's amazing.
There goes my life. That's 6 years out of. Again, like that's like a third of the last 19 years.
That's wild. So much fun.
Almost. So, almost.
We have a good time in the hotels, though. We jump on the beds. We ruffle up the sheets. We eat all the candy from the mini bar like Kevin McAllister.
And, remember when you were a kid and you thought hotels were so fun? I still staying in a hotel. Like, you know, good hotel. I still like staying in a good hotel. But like when you were a kid. And you were like, especially like when your friends were around, like if your friends were there to,
oh yeah,
you screw around in the hallways or whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hotels are still great. Better when I get to take my kids because they reinvigorate the joy of it. But if I stay in a surprisingly nice hotel, the other week I got hit with a random stay at a W. Yeah. Which was really nice. And I was like, oh yeah. Like, and you're just like walking around, like feeling kind of cool for a minute.
I always like, it's always funny too. Like when I travel with family members, like one year I was in Detroit for the Thanksgiving game. When I was at NFL Network, I used to ask on to the Thanksgiving game in Detroit because my dad's side of the family is all from there. So we would have Thanksgiving in Detroit and I would go cover the game in the morning. Like my family would come to the game, you know,
yeah.
And then we would all have Thanksgiving dinner at my uncle's house after. And so have you ever stayed in like the downtown Marriott there, the Renaissance?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, the Renaissance Center. Mm-hmm. So it's a massive, people don't know, it's just this massive Marriott that like overlooks Windsor, Canada, right? And so they must have had like low occupancy in Thanksgiving that year. So when I stayed there the night before Thanksgiving, the night of Thanksgiving, I had this suite that was legitimately like the entire floor. So I had, they upgraded me and I had a conference room in my hotel room. and my family came, like my mom, my dad, my brother, they came up and they're like, what the hell did your work like get you? Like, this has nothing to do with work. This is my discipline to Marriott that got me here. But yeah, I had a I, that Thanksgiving Eve, I had a conference room in my hotel room. So it does have some benefits. All this discipline and all these nights stayed.
That's amazing.
But if they want to throw me a little something else for my 6-year anniversary, I don't even know if we should call it that. Is it an anniversary? Kind of. Because it's not like, it's
6 years of captivity. It's like a white collar prison.
With really, I'm in a Westin right now, so really nice sheets in the
Really
Westin.
nice
I will
sheets.
say that, yeah.
All right, we're talking about football, guys. But this was good. It's always fun to chop it up with Albert. So we are doing our overreactions. I have seen a couple of teams. Albert has seen over a dozen teams at this point during training camp. This is what we do, right? Watching training camp practice, and it's a filtration, or it's like a what do you call it? A snowball effect, right? Where we get to talk to the coaches and the players, and they're inordinately excited about what's happening, and they all think they're going to win the Super Bowl. And then that hits us, and then we have to filter that out, the belief in what that is actually true and what's not true. But it's hard not to get excited, you know?
The everyone's undefeated thing is very real. Like, you know, it really is. Like, there's that, like, renewal. Put it this way, I've been to camps before where that doesn't exist, and that's usually not a good sign.
Like if you're at camp and everyone's like, oh boy, you know that the coach is probably going to get fired, and you know that that team's probably in competition for the number one pick. But so we're going to talk about our overreactions, stuff that we believe now because it's very exciting. And I will note, this is perilous, right? I was talking to actually someone at Giants camp about this the other day, where because I was thinking about doing this show. And last year, I remember doing a story on the Chargers and talking to everybody for that story about how they had set up this new Kellen Moore offense and what it was going to look like and the theory behind it. And the subtext to it all was Austin Eckler is going to run for like 3,000 yards. Like he might break the NFL rushing record. He's going to score like 25 touchdowns. And I remember getting into like a verbal dispute with my fantasy football partner in my high roller league because we had the number one pick. And I was like, we're taking Austin Eckler. And he's like, over my dead body. And I was like, you don't understand. I was like, this is what I do for a living. And the volume got high. And then he went on a business trip, and so before he went on the business trip, he locked in Christian McCaffrey as the number one pick, so we could not take Austin Eckler. And thank God
It's like
he
you put
did.
like a child lock on it, like so you couldn't change it.
Yeah, it was just like, hey, dude, just so you know, I don't believe you, and you know, it's fine. But
McCaffrey worked out for you, I would say.
McCaffrey worked out. We finished in second place, got a nice little we're not paying to play this year. Let's put it that way. But so it can work both ways, right? We can be in on a team that nobody else is in on, but we can also fall way in love with the team that maybe nobody else understands. And maybe that's where I'll start. I was at Giants camp, Albert, and I see a path to this team winning at least 9 games and finishing in second place in the NFC East.
I actually agree with you.
Yes, we are all in.
So
Yes.
this is a principle of mine, right? I would say there are a few principles I have in all my years covering the league. One of the principles I have, and this was actually really cemented, I would say, in 2017 with the Eagles, right? Is if you are good on the lines of scrimmage, then you will be in every game. And I remember the Eagles were coming off that year in 16 where Carson Wentz had played really well. And then you started to look at the rest of their roster and okay, like they got Alshon Jeffrey here and they've got, but then you looked at the lines of scrimmage and it was like, holy crap, they're loaded, you know? And that's when like Jason Kelce and Lane Johnson and Jason Peters and Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham, all those guys were in their prime, right? Like, so all those guys were at the height of their powers. And I remember saying, people always ask you, and you get asked this a lot, I'm sure too, like, who's your surprise team? Who's gonna be like the one that's really gonna break through? And that year it was the Eagles for me. It really cemented that principle that I had that if you're really good on the lines of scrimmage, then you are gonna be in every game. And I look at the Giants, and they already had some really nice building blocks in Andrew Thomas. Like Evan Neal's got talent. It hasn't manifested yet, but he's got talent. And they got Dexter Lawrence and Kayvon Thibodeau. Again, Thibodeau, you're kind of betting on the come. And then they go and they add Brian Burns, who I think was a steal. How they got him, what they got him for, versus what the Rams were willing to pay a year and a half earlier. I thought they stole Brian Burns. You add, a couple of nice pieces to the offensive line and Runyon and Illuminor. And it's a team that's going to be in every game. You know what I mean? I just think it's going to be a team that's going to be in every game. I think with that foundation, Brian Daboll makes it work on offense. And I think the defense has a chance to be really good with Shane Bowen as their first year defensive coordinator. So, all the way around, I think being in that division helps, but I don't know why they can't do what they did 2 years ago.
Right.
And that doesn't mean they're going to win the same amount of games, but I don't know why they can't be the team they were 2 years ago. Yes, not having Saquon hurts, but I think they can make up for it. I think to some degree, the dynamic element you had in Barkley can be replaced by Neighbors. Yeah, I really like where the Giants are, especially again with where that division is.
You add Carmen Brasillo, who did a great job as the offensive line coach with the Raiders. I think that there's a lot of excitement about what he's bringing. Here's the moment that got me the sub moment and then the moment. I was talking to Brian Daboll before practice, and he said, "Watch practice, right? Guess what we're not doing this year? 7-on-7. We're not doing 7-on-7. We're done with 7-on-7." And for the uninitiated, 7-on-7 is, quarterback, skill position players, tight
No
ends,
lineman.
no linemen, right? And then defensive backs, linebackers, right? And so a lot of times, and I kind of ran this by a bunch of other coaches that weren't Giants guys, right? And I was like, "Well, what's the purpose of this?" And they said, "This is really unique. It's interesting what he's doing because 7-on-7 can breed bad habits, right? Can get a quarterback just comfortable, and maybe you do it because you're trying to get your defensive line and your offensive line work somewhere else, and you're trying to kill two birds with one stone, and it's a great way to do that. But what happens is it can breed, whether it's like a false sense of comfort or, just a non-realistic scenario where, I don't know, you're not feeling the pressure, you're not feeling the pocket,
Yep.
right? So every period is 11 on 11. It's live team all the time. And so Daniel Jones, I was standing about probably like 15 yards away from him, 20 yards away from him, and he drops back and he immediately sees that he's got Neighbors one-on-one with Cordell Flott. And he lets this ball go. And I felt like a little kid when I saw it. Like I'm standing over it, probably at like the height of its, at like the highest it's going to be. And it's coming down. And the velocity on this thing is making the ball like shake. Like it's such a tight spiral and it's going so fast and perfect, like right in, like leading Malik Neighbors into the end zone. And I was like, holy smokes. Like Daniel Jones looks good. He looks tough. I know he's had some bad days, right? And he did throw a pick not too long after that. But this practice, it was 90 degrees outside. After the practice, he's doing like sprints on the side of the field. Like, this is a man possessed. I don't know.
I
Let's
mean,
go, you know?
all right. Can I go off on two side tangents based on what you said
Yes.
there? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Number one, the 11 on 11 thing I think is really interesting because I've been to 13 camps now. Today it'll be 14. There is so much more contact. There are so many more 2.5 hour practices. And I think the trend is swinging back around on sports science. And I was talking to one coach who said their injury rate 2 years ago was really high and they had had a light camp. They went harder last year. They lost more guys in camp and then their injury rate went way down during the season. So I think that, and look, like I think a big part of this is like the whole, I think a big part of this is the whole like copycat thing. Because if you look at the four teams that were standing at the end, all four of those coaches subscribe to this, that you have to callous your team, that you should have 2.5 hour practices in training camp. That's San Francisco, Kyle Shanahan, Detroit with Dan Campbell, Kansas City with Andy Reid, and Baltimore with John Harbaugh. But it was noticeable, Connor. Like you go to different teams. It's like, holy crap. Like there are like where I feel like maybe like 2 or 3 years ago, you'd go out and there'd be a bunch of 90-minute practices. Like there's a lot less of that now, you know? And I thought that was interesting. The other thing, and this is a little bit of a rant for me, stop overreacting to interceptions in practice. Stop overreacting to what you see on Twitter. Seriously, enough. Because and I got a story that's going up this morning. Everybody can read it at the site on Brock Purdy. And I talked to Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy about his progress, and he did not look great in OTAs, right? He was actually working with, you know, his quarterback's coach, who I know you know, Will Hewlett,
Absolutely.
on reconfiguring his footwork. And he felt like last year his timing with his eyes and his feet didn't match up. And so Kyle told me there were points in OTAs where he didn't look good. But Kyle had to remind the other coaches, like, hey, he is kind of working through this and there's going to be a benefit long term for it, right? Then the practice I was at, he threw four picks. Well, there was one of the picks where the rush came down on him and he flipped his hips, and then another rusher came in and he kind of started backpedaling and just launched it like on a corner out, probably a 40 or 50 yard throw in the air. And the ball went through a receiver's hands and into the stomach of a safety. And all right, first of all, it should have been a catch, right? Not to throw the receiver under the bus, but it should have been a catch. All right. No context on that, of course. And then the other part of it is like, and I talked to Brock about this after the practice, he was testing what he can get away with. And that's the way a lot of quarterbacks operate in training camp, right? Now, if you're competing for a job, it's different. But if you're secure and you know you're going to be the quarterback, that's how a lot of quarterbacks use training camp is, all right, like we're going to run this play and I'm going to figure out here what I can get away with based on what I see. Based on how fast the defense is moving, I'm going to test what my receiver can do, right? So I want to see if I can trust this guy in this spot late in the game. Is he going to go get the ball? Is he going to beat the DB one on one? And, you know, when you do those things in practice, you're going to have interceptions. You're going to have things that aren't going to look right. But in the end, like, what is practice for if you're not doing that? You know what I mean? So I feel like there are some really good beat reporters out there that people should listen to and trust, who see it every day and who talk to people and who understand. And then there's like a bunch of overreaction from people who go to one practice or people who aren't really doing the job, who like where it's like you're not giving any context to it, right? So I would just say, like, and again, like that's I think that's always existed in training camp. I just feel like it's gotten so much worse now with all the video that gets up there on Twitter, and all the rest of it. You know,
Well, see,
Kyle Shanahan wants his quarterbacks to throw interceptions in camp. He tells them that.
think about how many ridiculous storylines that we've like, you know, like a someone a like a picture gets taken at a weird angle and it's like, oh, this guy's fat this year, you know, and then ends up like rushing for like 3,000 yards. Like we it is so
I've gotten in some pictures during training camp where I look terrible and like feel like I need to go lose some weight. So
yeah.
I think we all feel the effect of that,
I mean, tell me about it. You know,
right?
I'm 10 up this training camp. I gotta, we gotta get ourselves down to fight and wait before the season starts, or else we're in big trouble. All right, give me an overreaction of yours, Albert.
The Bears look really good.
Okay.
You know, I understand. I think the last time they were in the playoffs was 2018, and I believe that's their only playoff appearance since 2010. So I think if I remember right, that's one playoff appearance in the last 13 seasons, which isn't good. So, you know, maybe this is a tough horse to hitch your wagon to. But just seeing what it looks like at camp, knowing how good their defense played at the end of last year, what they've got on the back seven, right? Like, and And then offensively, like what that looks like now with these big receivers in the open field who are going to be able to generate yards after catch for Caleb Williams in his first year as a starter. Keenan Allen's 230 pounds. DJ Moore is 220 pounds. Roma Dunze is 215 pounds. I mean, like you look at what that is, right? And I just think they've really set up Caleb Williams for success. Now, they do need a couple of things to come along. The line needs to keep coming along, which they've invested a lot the last couple of years in trying to get the offensive line right. They do need some more pass rush. So does that mean they bring Yannick Ngakoue back, maybe? Austin Booker, their fifth round pick out of Kansas, has flashed in camp. So can he be an answer, opposite Montez Sweat? There are questions there, no doubt. But I just think looking at them, I feel like the one thing that can hold them back is the division. You
Right.
know, like the division's really tough. But that looked like a really good team to me. So and they've really set up Caleb for success too. I've said this a couple different places, but I think like what Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron and all those guys did was pretty smart in using the 1 hour Zooms before the draft to put in cadence and put in formations and put in terminology, and then use the 30 visit to ingratiate him to his teammates. So when he got there in May, he could hit the ground running.
Right.
And then they gave him a detailed plan for the 40 days between OTAs and training camp. So I just feel like they've really put him in a position to succeed. And I talked to Eberflus about it the other day. And, I thought one thing that was really interesting about it is like, I think they feel like they've got a team where it's their third year. Like, it's not fair to the veterans to make them sit around and wait, right? So it was in a way, it was serving the veterans to start ramping Caleb up in March and to make the decision early that they were going to take him number one overall and then to install him as starter early, right?
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, it's serving guys like DJ Moore and Keenan Allen and Montez Sweat and Tremaine Edmonds and, Tevin Jenkins, all the guys that they built around there. So I think that they're a really interesting team.
I like too. I was watching the Hall of Fame game, and side note here. Well, I was watching the Hall of Fame game to see the new dynamic kickoff. Side note, that's not how it's gonna look in regular games, people. So,
Right.
I think what
I
we
like
have
how
to.
they I like how they like have dubbed it the dynamic kickoff too. Is that like are they complimenting themselves?
I mean,
That they calling it dynamic because they feel good about what they've done here?
I wrote this. It's fairly stunning to me that, like, I mean, the movie Concussion came out 10 years ago. It's not that long ago that the NFL was just like, oh, what do you mean head injuries? And we have literally changed the kickoff now to, like, you know what I mean? Like, things don't change in our society that quickly. Like, Concussion came out less than 10 years ago. It was 9 years ago. The movie.
That's crazy. It was only 9 years ago.
9 years ago.
And
So,
now.
and now we have a new kickoff. And I'm not saying that one begat the other, but of course they're related, you know?
That's even that, though, isn't as fast as they flipped on gambling.
Well, yes, but gambling makes you money.
Yeah, that's true.
This is a very American issue, correct? Right? It's like,
Gambling was really, really evil until it wasn't.
yeah. I mean, but my only side note on the dynamic kickoff. So I was talking to some special teams coaches about this, and they're like, probably the coaches before the game were like, "Hey, j let's just kick it live so we can see our guys block." But I don't think it's gonna look like that. I actually don't think the receiving team is gonna re like the receiving team teams kept retreating back towards the ball carrier. I don't think they're gonna do that. But
You
anyway.
don't? Okay.
I know. I think they're going to
I
attack. I
think
think they're
it,
going to go up, you know?
I mean, like a bunch of like special teams coaches, when I asked around last month on it, like basically said it's going to set up like a running play, which I think you could see that. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? Like, I think that was apparent. It also like the kickoffs that I saw from that night, didn't it look like it looked like to me, like it was really like, oh, a big play could be coming, and then one guy sheds a block and takes the returner down, right?
Yes. Yeah.
In that way, it almost felt like a fourth and one on the 50. You know what I mean? Like where, like, if the guy gets past that little area, he
He's
could be
gone.
gone,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah. It's
I don't know. Do you kind of take away from it? Like, maybe we won't see a lot of 40-yard returns, but we could see 80-yard returns. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I agree with that. I think it reminded me, like they, I think it was Troy Aikman said on the broadcast. He's like, oh, it's just blocked up like a running play. To me, it was like when you have like kind of like a bad quarterback and you're trying to get the ball out quickly and mm-hmm. you get a receiver behind like two or three other receivers. So you have not your best blockers blocking
right.
in a spatial, you know, like a challenging spatial area. And then you have a playmaker trying to get through those blocks. And sometimes it works, right? Sometimes you get a 60, 70, 80 yard return, but, we need Hard Knocks legend Mike Westhoff back for this. This is he's the guy who could break this all wide open.
Actually, you know, saw Westy the other day at Denver. Still, he's right in the thick of the new kickoff. Yeah,
I bet he is. Yeah. All right.
Any thoughts on the Bears or no?
What's that?
Any thoughts on the Bears? You agree? Disagree?
I'm with you. I mean, I've been in this camp for a while now, and I think that, you know, this is a Ryan Poles deserves all the flowers. I mean, you know, they've done everything to this point. And I was thinking about this during the Hall of Fame game where a lot of people were complaining about Tyson Badgett being the backup quarterback. And I was like, you have to realize that I think Tyson Badgett went 2-2 as a starter last year.
Yeah, he wasn't bad. Yeah, he wasn't bad.
He was 2-2 as a starter as an undrafted rookie free agent out of Shepherd.
Yep.
Shepherd University, if I'm right. I mean, that's not irresponsible in the way that it was irresponsible, I think, to not have like a backup for Zach Wilson. And there were some other dynamics there where why Zach Wilson didn't have like a better presence behind him with the Jets, right? I think there were some financial considerations there. But they're just good. Like, you know, and they're doing things that they have a lot of good mid to late round or undrafted players, and they just, yep. they know what they're looking for, you know? And okay. So who cares? And Badgett's plucky, you know, and to me, it symbolizes this roster of like, okay, we might be scared. Cause it's like, oh, there's no star power here. No star power here. There's probably going to be three or four guys that we are kind of floored by, right? That hit the ground running this season. And, you know, I think 9 wins for the Bears is completely reasonable. And saying that for a rookie quarterback's first season is pretty wild.
Right, right. And I will say, like, I got to spend a few minutes with Caleb on Saturday, and he just seems so prepared for this. You know what? He just seems – and I think maybe what's most impressive about him, I'm going to write about this, is like how – the kids had so many things said about him, and a lot of young athletes would lash out against that or push back or carry some like chip on his shoulder, and he lets it all roll off his back. You know, now he does hear it. Like, he did tell me he hears it, but like, he's able to kind of work through all of that in a way that I think is not normal for a 22-year-old. So it's just a really impressive kid to be around a little bit, and like very, very prepared to be a franchise quarterback, which you'd expect because, you know, he was a starter at two pretty major programs in college.
Yeah. I think the Caleb thing is probably emblematic of our pre-draft process becoming a little too crazy, right?
Yep.
And us being so thirsted for news that we'll latch on to. I mean, just think about the utter ridiculousness of some of the Caleb Williams stuff now in hindsight. And yep. we don't know how he's going to handle stuff, but when live bullets start flying, but when you really take a step back and you look at what we... And not me. I mean, I kind of wrote something pretty scathing against it. But this idea of like what people were concerned about, and it's like, what are we doing? You know, yeah. like, you know, and Caleb, I think, is one of those guys who was perfectly made as a pinata for the pre-draft process. And so it's good. Yeah. It's good. You know,
I always think the important thing, and I think the smart teams, really all teams do this. Like, the important thing is like, what are the people who are around him think of him? You know?
Yeah.
What do his teammates think of him? What do his coaches think of him? What do, and beyond just that, like, like when you're digging into like how a guy was thought of in his college program, like what do the trainers think of him? What do the weight room like assistants think of him? Like that's the stuff that, I think is really important. Like that was actually an interesting thing about Cam Newton, back in the day was, like Cam had this reputation for being a, superstar and all that different stuff. Yet, like the guys who went into Auburn said, like, you could find somebody who's picking up towels, 3 hours after the game that has some story about how Cam did something really cool for him, And like I know like those are the sorts of things that a lot of these teams look for. And I think like the stuff that you're doing with people who can't help you, you know what I mean? People who can't do anything for you. Like that's a lot of times how you figure out who somebody is. And I think Caleb very emphatically checks those boxes.
My other overreaction.
Yep.
I'm trying to think. Do you want a Lions overreaction or do you want a Jets overreaction,
Give me
Albert?
both. Why don't we do both? We got time, right? We got a few minutes here.
The Lions overreaction is just holy smokes. Like, I mean, like, how is this team not winning the Super Bowl? Like, I was out there and Dan Campbell's talking about having to tamp down like a practice that would have been walked through by any other team. If we're comparing it to other teams, practices that starting quarterbacks in other cities didn't even show up to. And these guys are killing each other. Like, killing each other. Like, Amon-Ra St. Brown catches a touchdown and he's whipping the football at the ground and he's, "Did you guys see that? It's a touchdown!" And like, this is like,
Competitive, yeah.
I've never seen anything
So
like it before.
I got a great anecdote from the other day when I was there, and I said this to Dan after practice. I thought what was so impressive is how they know how to practice. And I don't know if you got this when you were there, but there were a couple hits. Like I was there on a heavy scrimmage day, right? Like they scrimmaged almost the entire practice, 11 on 11, full pads, all of that. And there were a couple of collisions where, like when you're at training camp and there is this sort of collision where it's not even how hard someone gets hit. It's just kind of how it happens where like everybody freezes and it's like, oh God, this guy's gonna pop up and there's gonna be a fight. There were like three or four of those where the guy popped up and nothing happened. And I thought it was like the most interesting thing. And I said that to Dan. I'm like, it looks like you guys know how to practice. Like it looks like everybody out there has respect for each other, has knows what their roles are, like, and it's competitive as hell. But like the fact that like there were a couple of just situations that I think, especially this deep into camp, you like when you see it happen, you're like your radar is up, like there is about to be a fight. And then the team just moved on to the next play. It just kind of gave me this feeling that there's like this championship DNA there. You know what I mean? Like that the team knows how to practice, it knows what it's out there for, the guys know each other. And it's just a very, for as intense as it is. And as much as people poked fun at the up downs and all of that different stuff, over the last few years, it's an incredibly professional team. You
It
know what I
is.
mean?
It is. I mean, so Dan does this thing where called the chaos drill, and I don't know if you saw it when you were out there, but he blows the whistle and then it's like, okay, we're down six. We're at the 35-yard line, there's 20 seconds left, all communications cut off. Can't talk to the offensive coordinator, I'm not giving you a play. Figure it out. And the coaches all back off. Nobody does anything, and it's all on them, he'll just blow the whistle in the middle of practice and it's totally random, right? And you just blow it up and everybody backs away and you guys have to figure it out. And just like they can do it. Like, how many places can you drop? Okay, probably like realistically, probably like 13 or 14 of the NFL teams could have some degree of it. Like Kansas City, you're probably fine. Buffalo, Josh Allen's just gonna run over three people, and score.
I'd say where I am now, Cincinnati could probably
Cincinnati could do it, you know. But to have it look the way that it looked, like you couldn't tell that there was a Chaos Rule, was pretty amazing.
They're very complete now too. Like they've gotten a lot better at corner. Like that's one
defensive
spot
line.
That, yeah, I mean, like they just, you know, Terry and Arnold and Ennis Rakescraw have had great camps. And so this is a team that was like looking to get better. A corner traded for Carlton Davis. Now they have three guys they think can really play there, right? And so much of their roster is ascending. You know, like, you know, between Brian Branch and Sam Laporta and Penei Sewell and Amon-Ra St. Brown, like there are so many guys there. Jameson Williams now has had a nice camp. Like there are so many guys that still haven't fully tapped their potential, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, how many guys like Jared Goff? We know what he is, and Jared Goff's proven himself to be a really good NFL quarterback. But outside of like him, and maybe Taylor Decker, and you know Frank Ragnow, there aren't a lot of key pieces on that team where, like you're saying, like could this guy still level up? You know, there's a lot of like guys that like that are in key spots for the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My Jets overreaction. Well, I mean, nothing qualifies as an overreaction.
I don't know why I had that reaction. I just kind of smirked.
But it is. It's true. It's like everything with the Jets is its own overreaction.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that collectively, I've been told this and told this and told this and told this. And I think like until you really try to marinate yourself in it and to see it as it is, I don't think anybody there cares what Aaron Rodgers does. I don't think anybody there cares what he says. And this hit me the other day because I was watching warmups and he's dropping back and just every throw is hitting a receiver perfectly in stride. Like he's not even thinking about it. He's sleepwalking through it. And I remember going to those camps during Zach Wilson's rookie year and thinking, he can't hit someone in stride. Like every receiver is stopping to catch the ball or turning around to catch the ball, right? As I move my face away from the microphone to do that, like you guys need to see that. But to the point where I was like, they're going to put up with pretty much anything because they have to. But I think that if he's healthy, it's going to be worth it. And it's funny because I think that the two pieces to this overreaction are, one, I think this defense could end up being the best defense in the NFL.
Yep.
I don't know how bold of a claim that is, but I very much think that they could be the number one defense in the NFL. What they've done with that defensive line, I think guys who are going to flash, Will McDonald, who's a first round pick 2 years ago, looks amazing, looks a lot stronger, you know. You combine that with the fact that when they are coming after Aaron in practice, he instantly has a solution. Whereas, like,
right.
You don't remember, you have this selective amnesia back from the Zach Wilson days where that was a sack, it was a throwaway, it was a just, you know, you spike the ball in the dirt and you blow the whistle and you try it again. Aaron's scoring touchdowns, you know, and I, you know, I'm not as cliche as to say this is iron sharpening iron, but like nothing bothers him on the field. And I really do think it's probably somewhat more harmonious than we imagine it to be. Like he's not walking around handing out like anti-vaccination pamphlets to everybody. This is a fairly normal training camp. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think like the other thing that.
Don't make me look stupid for saying this, Jets, by the way.
Look, in all the hysteria over Egypt, right, and missing those 3 days.
Which was dumb and an unforced error.
Right. Like,
and I'm not moving off of that.
Right,
but anyway.
Right. But, like, one thing that I think got lost a little bit is that he was there for the other 8 weeks of the offseason program, right. Which is a hell of a lot more than he was doing in Green Bay at the end. And he was winning MVPs without that in Green Bay.
Yeah.
And so, like, the fact that he was engaged for that much of the off season and last year too, like, gives him a foundation that really he wasn't giving himself with his teammates in Green Bay, you know? And he was winning MVPs.
Right.
you know, so, Like I look at that part of it, and you know, I even look at some of the tension in camp. And this goes again to the whole, like, you know, Twitter overreaction to stuff, but like, if Garrett Wilson and Aaron Rodgers aren't going to get a little hot with each other to try to work something out fast in training camp, where are they going to do it?
Right.
You know, like, that's good. I don't know where we got to this point where confrontation is always bad. Confrontation. All right. Like, maybe this is like an old school way of looking at it. Confrontation is the easiest way to solve conflict.
Yes.
Like, it is the fastest, easiest way to solve conflict. If you are worried about what the cameras are catching and you're, you know, tiptoeing around each other, well, then the problem's never going to get solved.
Right.
If there's a problem on the field and you see it and you get after your teammate on it and he gets after you back, like, 20 minutes later, you're going to be fine and the problem is going to be solved. And I remember having this conversation with people 13 years ago when Bill O'Brien and Tom Brady yelled at each other on the sideline in Washington and how much attention that got, right?
Feels like everything worked out.
They were in the Super Bowl that year. Like, you know, so I don't know where we got to this place where it's like, it's almost like we're in like the cafeteria of a middle school. Like, ooh, do you see what he said? Sometimes these are the best ways to, I'd say more often than not, these are this is the best way to solve problems, is to confront it as it's happening and find a solution as it's happening. And if you're doing that in the moment, a lot of times it's going to look like that.
Yeah.
You know, these guys aren't accountants. You know what I mean? Like, they're football players. They're out there in an intense environment in the middle of the dog days of camp. And so I even look at like little things like that as encouraging, because I know how much Aaron thinks of Garrett Wilson, and we all know what his potential is. So if he's working through things like that with guys like Wilson and guys like Breece Hall, guys like Mike Williams, who's new there, you know, that's going to put them in a better place in the fall too.
Andy, you know, whatever, he was pissed at Joe Tippmann for flying snaps over his head. And then he came out and, you know, came out and talked to reporters. And I get the sense that, and I don't know this to be necessarily true, but there's not really like an Aaron Rodgers day. It's kind of like when Aaron wants to, you know, when Aaron wants to kind of come out and say something, he'll say something. And for him to come out and say that, hey, Joe Tippmann could be an all pro, like, didn't have to do that. But he comes out and he patches it up. And so I do think that there's probably something to that, you know, and I think that this team is going to be fine. I think they're going to be really good. I picked them to win the AFC East again. So I really hope it happens. You know,
I think last year I picked Buffalo to win the AFC East, but the Jets to get to the AFC title game.
I picked the Patriots to win the AFC East last year. Let's be real. So I'm still bruised from that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember, I actually remember a radio appearance. I think I was driving my kid to school and, or to camp or something. And, old Connor Orr popped on Boston radio and, had to explain himself.
I said, believe everybody. And then they got rid of the greatest head coach in NFL history.
But I think the Jets should be the favorite in the AFC East, right?
They should be. I mean, they better be.
Buffalo's reset their roster a bunch, right? Like, a bunch of guys who were key pieces there. Stephon Diggs, Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, Tre'Davious White. Like, there's been a lot of attrition there. And then Miami, they've basically gutted their defense, you know? Yeah. Christian Wilkins is gone. Jerome Baker's gone. Xavien Howard's gone. So, I mean, I don't know why the Jets wouldn't be the favorite in the AFC East.
Do you have any other overreactions, Albert? Do you want to talk Noah Lyles? So, I mean, what do you got?
I'm gonna take a private conversation public. Woo! A high school buddy of mine, shout out to my buddy Logan, who I've known since I was like 7 or 8 years old, asked me for some juice. So I told him to take the over on the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh yeah.
So there's a wild card for you. You know what? I always struggle with these, like, who's the surprise team? Because I just feel like the NFL, we're so saturated with NFL coverage that it's so hard to find a team that hasn't been talked about in that context. But I think that this might be one. Now, I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl, but I think it's 24 draft picks over the last 2 years. And I believe, you have to look this up, but I believe they led the league in snaps played by rookies last year, which of course can be a little misleading because if you're a bad team, then rookies have a better chance to play. And that certainly was the case last year. But, you know, they already lost one of the second year guys in BJ Ojulari, who I know they're expecting big things from. But Paris Johnson looks like he is going to be a left tackle for them for the next 10 years. Michael Wilson at receiver has drawn comparisons internally, and a lot of those guys were with the Vikings, to Adam Thielen. You know, they've got, you know, some young DBs in that class. Garrett Williams is one. And then this year's rookie class, Marvin's Marvin. We don't need to go over that, but like beyond just Marvin Harrison, Darius Robinson looks like he's going to be a day one contributor. Max Melton, they really feel like they've got something there. Like that could wind up being, he could wind up as a second rounder being a number one corner for them. I just think like looking at where that team is and looking how they were competitive last year and looking where Kyler Murray is and was, and how it's almost like in the way that he's flipped his career a little bit in the last year and a half, almost like he took all that stuff that was said about him after the study clause in his contract personally. I feel like there's, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying they're going to win 11 games and they are in a difficult division and that factors into everything, but could they get to like 7 or 8 wins? I could see that.
So I have, I predicted in my 100 bold predictions column earlier this year that they will have one of the longest winning streaks in the NFL this year. And here's why I agree with you. I think it's a roster that's coming around for sure, but also look at the, I don't know, like week 8 to week 16, you have the Dolphins, who I think they could beat. You know, I think head to head, they're fairly even to me at this point. Like, I don't see the Dolphins as like that much better than them at this moment in time. You have the Bears week 9 with the rookie quarterback. You have the Jets week 10. Then you have your bye week. Then you have Seattle, Minnesota, Seattle. Okay. You have New England. You have the Carolina Panthers. They're going to be able to rack up some serious wins at the end of this season, you know? And, yeah. You know, the beginning of the schedule is tough, but they beat the Cowboys last year, you know, when they were ripping the heads off of people. This team is not scared of anybody. I think they're built really well. I think they have some of the best, you know, players at certain positions in the league. So why not? You know what I mean?
I mean, I just like look at what they've done. One thing I really like about what Monty Ossenfort and Jonathan Gannon have done there too is like they're getting really good at premium positions now, right? Like I mentioned, Michael Wilson, obviously they have Marvin Harrison at receiver. They've got Paris Johnson. They signed Jonas Williams at tackle. You know, they're bringing in, I think, Max Melton again. Like they feel like he can be a number one corner in the league. These are important premium positions that they're filling with rookies, you know?
Yeah.
And like the idea that they could get really good, really fast at those spots and the financial flexibility that gives you over the next couple of years, even though you've got a quarterback on a massive contract. I just think they're in a really good spot to be one of those teams that maybe they start 2-4 or 2-5, and then they wind up, you know, who knows, 8-9. And not to say that that's like earth shattering or anything, but I mean, in the NFC, could you sneak into the playoffs? Maybe I'm getting too far ahead of myself on that, but I think they're going to be a good team.
The, I mean, Trey McBride, I think, might be, you know, behind like Sam Laporta, maybe like the best,
yeah,
young tight end in the NFL. You know, there's really good players here.
Right. Like, I think Trey Benson can be a good back for them.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just, I just like a lot of things about what they've done over the last year and a half and putting the team together. And I think Gannon's got a really good staff too. Like I think Drew Petzing and Nick Rollis are really good young coordinators. Like I hesitate to compare it to like where the Eagles were, but the makeup of Gannon's staff is sort of like the makeup of like Sirianni's staff was early on, you know, with that first group that he had. And you can see where the vibe in the building is sort of similar to.
We did it, Albert. I don't think that's too bad. I don't think we overreacted too much.
No. Everyone's undefeated.
Everyone's undefeated. Well, except for who was winning the Hall of Fame game when the Lightning struck?
I don't know. I'd have to look that up. Does it count? Because the game didn't
ask
finish.
John Harbaugh. It all counts. Sure. Well,
No. I know that, but like the game, does it like count because the game wasn't finished?
I do love that. We call it like the Hall of Fame game, like it's this big deal, and then like a little rain comes and we're like, ah, screw it. You know, probably not.
It's better than when the logo melted into the field.
Yes. Where are you next, Albert? And when are you coming home? Everyone wants to know. When
Cincinnati,
are we gonna...
Cincinnati, Cleveland, Kansas City, Minnesota, home.
All right. Home
on Thursday night. I guess technically when I landed, it'll be Friday morning. And thank you for prompting me to reevaluate some things in my life too with that Marriott. Hopefully some executives from Marriott are listeners and maybe they can throw me a bone or two for all my loyalty.
We're so sorry, Albert.
Six years
of your life in here. You went from birth to kindergarten in a Marriott.
I have spent more days in Marriott properties over the last 19 years than my daughter has spent alive. And again, she turns 5 next week.
Amazing. That's why you guys come here, is to learn about the stories inside the stories and how many nights Albert spent at a Marriott. Thank you, Albert.
I do have over 1 million points. Just throw that in there.
Protect yourself from hackers out there. All right.
If they want to double my number for all my loyalty, I'd be happy to accept that gift.
All right. Albert's out there throwing around Marriott points like, who knows, someone at a gentleman's club with a lot of singles. And we're going to be here throughout the remainder of training camp. We're going to ease this ship back in to the port. And before you know it, we're going to have regular football. So look out for Matt and Gilberto later this week. And thank you guys, as always, for sticking with the MMQB podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.